Do you lie awake at night wishing for something better? When you look at your future a year from now, is there a light at the end of that tunnel? Do you feel like you were meant for something more? Opportunity will not come knocking on your door unless you're out there looking for it. How do you do it? Our guests on the Empower Radio Show will be sharing their secret to success. We'll be bringing you authors, speakers, entrepreneurs from many different fields who come from various backgrounds. They will be sharing their stories of success and of early failures. You'll hear about the challenges they faced when they launched their ideas and the creative ways that they overcame obstacles. Our guests will inspire you to find your way down the path to success in this ever-changing world. Jump on board and become empowered.
Hey folks, welcome to Empower Radio Show. This is Linda Ballesteros. I am your host today. Thanks so much for joining us. And we are just a few days away from Christmas here. I know everybody's got a lot of things on their plate and they're hustling and bustling around, trying to make sure that they get to see everybody in the family, see their friends, do all the things on their checklist. But, you know, sometimes that can be pretty stressful. And just keep in mind to pace yourself. And the main thing is to enjoy those people that you are able to connect with and those people that you're able to see, and just enjoying the holidays. That holiday spirit should really carry out throughout the year, something that usually dwindles by the end of January or in February, certainly, because we start thinking about taxes. But, you know, there again, really try to enjoy the time that you have and know that it's all precious. And, you know, I always say that time is that one commodity that you can't get back. So be sure that you enjoy the time that people spend with you. My guest today is Guy Oliver. Guy is a professional writer and of actually more than 25 years. He is a blogger and an author. He authored A Life That Mattered. That's something he's going to be talking about today. He actually refers to himself as just a regular guy. However, curiosity about life and his love for the written word makes him anything but a regular guy. So help me in welcoming Guy Oliver. Guy, welcome to the show today. Are you there, Guy? I don't hear you. Maybe you've muted yourself. Sometimes we have some technology issues. There you are. Okay, good deal.
Yes.
Well, welcome to the show, Guy.
Well, thank you for having me. Merry Christmas. I don't know what that was, but hey, technology.
I know, and I always say I love technology when it works, but when it doesn't, it makes my head spin around because that is not my forte.
You know, in addition to being a writer for more than 25 years, I've been in the software industry for most of that time as a technical writer and marketing copywriter, and I live in a world where people make money off of technology, and all I see is how broken it is.
Well, and the crazy thing, Guy, is that it changes so quickly. I'm sure by the time you get some of that the technical work that you do out, it's time to go back and update it.
Oh yeah, it's an ongoing thing, and I guess. Yeah. My point is that it's just always amazing to me when it actually does work.
Because there are so many chances, so many points right down the road along the way that it can break down. And, you know, the thing is that when we look at, you know, our life and the way that our journey is, there's so many points in our journey that things and obstacles can get into our way, and we have choices as to whether we allow that to happen and how we respond to that. And I think that, you know, your book about A Life That Mattered really helps us in better understanding how, you know, how a life that that crosses your path can give you joy, and it can give you sadness, and it can bring all of these emotions, especially if it's your child. Tell us a little bit about the book and why you decided to write the book.
The book, I just want to say first, I'm very sensitive to the fact that you have a mission to assist others with business success, and that you're talking to a lot of entrepreneurs and small business owners, some of whom are probably struggling because that's the nature of the beast. And this book wasn't really written with that in mind. What I found is that many of the travails that I experienced and documented in this book are relevant to any effort that people typically take on, such as getting a small business off the ground. You're going to face a lot of chaos. You're going to face a lot of challenges, both financial and emotional. Just, you know, if you've been an employee for most of your life and decide to strike out on your own, that's a very scary proposition. And so what I hope that people who haven't experienced the kind of loss that I talk about in the book or write about is a sense of hope and optimism that there is light on the other side when you get through that adversity that's preventing you from your dreams. Mm-hmm. The book is about my son. He 4 years ago in November, he was involved in a one-car accident with fiance, and neither of them survived. And it was a very difficult time in my life. I don't think that really even needs to be said, but that is what motivated me to finally begin writing. My friends and family who knew me as a writer and were participating in the promotion of my previous book, which was a humor book on relationships, said that I ought to take this capability that I had and use it for catharsis for myself, but I also wanted to help others who were dealing with some of the themes in the book, which include addiction, our justice system, and losing a loved one. Especially losing a child is kind of a special one because of the way that things are out of order. And, you know, I know that you recently, well, for you, I'm sure it's very recent still, you recently lost your husband, Mario, and and I can't imagine losing a spouse, but losing a child is an out-of-order kind of event that compounds the difficulty of dealing with an unexpected loss.
You know, many times I think I've not had the same loss that you have. I did lose my husband, but I think with any loss, a part of your dreams and your future kind of dies with that, because your dreams include certain people in that picture. If you're doing a vision board, then you certainly don't include the death of a family member, but it really doesn't matter, because life does go on, and we have to figure out how to create a new vision board, and we have to figure out what goes into that. What were some of the steps, and how did you go through that to prepare yourself to write, Guy? Because I know that after Mario passed away, and even the year or so prior to that, when I was a caregiver, my creativity was shut down. I was under so much stress, and probably a lot of depression in that as well, that my creative juices were not flowing. How did you make that shift to allow the creative you know, your creative gift to come back?
I'm really glad you asked that question, because I was thinking about, again, your audience and, you know, the, say, the loss of a job that motivates striking out on your own or something. I mean, I've been there. I lost a job where I thought I was on a fast-track career, and I decided to take that opportunity to become a freelance writer. And for about 2 years, I was very successful doing that. And you're right. There's a you have to go back to the drawing board and, as you put it, re-storyboard your plans for the future. And a difficult thing that I face personally in this journey of coping with the loss of my son was the fact that from the perspective of the world, I mean, something that I really bring to the table in any relationship is a sensitivity to your perspective. And so I'm very almost hypersensitive to what other people may be thinking about a particular experience that I have with them. So when people would tell me to write about the loss of my son, and they would usually couch it in terms of, you know, write about what was great about his life. Well, from the outside looking in, I imagine that he lived a very unremarkable life. He was a high school dropout. He was a drug addict, and as such, cavorted in his early teens into his mid-20s. He cavorted with unsavory characters who could get him drugs. He was involved in a number of petty crimes, breaking into homes and taking whatever he thought he could sell for drug money. These are the actions of an addict. And then he eventually, that led him to a 10-year prison sentence. But on the other side of that, he began to really make something of himself. And I was very impressed with the fact that he started with a very humble beginning. He was satisfied to go to a vocational welding school, but as he restoryboarded his life, what he planned was to take high-risk jobs such as underwater welding, and which paid very well, up to $100 an hour, and then parlay that into a college education, and then maybe go into a field like professional sales or something, where he could, not only earn a better paycheck, but have a platform for helping others, because that was a big part of his life. And I think many of the people that are listening to this now, if you have a dream of being financially successful, part of that dream should be, carve out a sense of how you can then give back to others who haven't achieved that kind of success yet, mm-hmm. and to give back into their lives. And that was what he wanted to do. From that concept was born this notion, which the title reflects, A Life That Mattered. Everybody, to just look at his story from the surface, would say, that's not a life that mattered. That's not somebody that anybody would ever care about, except his mother and me. But the truth is, what he did with all the adversity he faced and brought on himself was really quite remarkable and was worth telling his story.
Mm-hmm. You know, it is kind of... it is one of those things that we don't think a lot about, is how the people that we come contact with every day, they matter to people beyond those that we know. I network a lot, so I meet people all the time, and I know them on a business level and, you know, semi-social, but I really don't know what their life looks like beyond that. It's the same way when you see someone that is not using all the skills that they were born with. They are not making those great choices. They still matter to people beyond those that you see around them. One of the radio shows that I used to do was Behind the Business Card, because we need to get to know the person behind the person that's standing in front of us. So for those people, Guy, that may have known your son, a facet, because there are many facets to all of us, may have known a facet of your son, and but not the whole person. What do you say to those of us that are, I think we make quick judgment, I think we put people in buckets or in categories? What do you say to those people that are judging others and maybe just need to take a step back and rethink that?
The first thing that comes to mind is that the easiest judgment that is passed on my son and people like him is the fact that he was a drug addict and a convicted felon. First of all, nobody is immune from addiction. Addiction can happen to anyone, and people who haven't experienced addiction or don't have a loved one who has an addiction can't understand how easily you can become trapped. It can begin with just very innocent and simple exploration about things that you're curious about, and it can very quickly get out of control when you're talking about substance abuse. What many people don't understand about the addict is that what you're witnessing when you witness the bad behavior and the repugnant lifestyle and all the bad decisions that are made under the influence of that drug are just that. You're looking at the effect of a chemical that is interacting with chemicals that occur naturally in your body. And that's what drives your thinking, your behavior, how your treatment of others. And occasionally what we would see, we would have the blessing of seeing Tim sort of get back on the right path for a little while. And then we would remember the really amazing person that he was, and we would begin to see and indulge in the fantasy of this person that all the potential that he had and all that he was going to accomplish. And then he would relapse. I think there's that. And then this notion of being a convicted felon. We have a lot in our justice system that are trapped because they were caught with possession of drugs. They weren't even committing other crimes than the crime of possessing a thing the law says you may not possess. So you're in your car and you have 5 ounces of weed, and you know you're two times over the limit of what you can possess, and it'd be a misdemeanor, you know. And the next thing you know, you're either on probation or you're in jail. And if you're on probation, you've got a felony conviction. Nobody wants to hire you. What do you do now? You don't have a job. You can't get a job. So what I would like for people to know about my son, is that there is a human being behind that label that you've placed on them of drug addict or convicted felon or what have you. And that human being in a normal state of mind typically just wants to be loved and to have friends and to be accepted by family. And it's the very simple things that we all want. And in that same vein, for your listeners who have a dream of business success, don't let other people diminish your dream because they know you as an accountant or as a technical writer or as just a marketing guy. Don't let that perception of you in that role, in that bucket, as you put it, limit what you think you can do, because my son certainly didn't let it limit him. And he was on a fast track. He only had 12 months after he got out of prison before he had his accident. I have no doubt that had he had another 10 years on this earth, his success would have dwarfed my own.
That's an amazing vision that you had, to know that things would have been different. You know, they would have been very different. Now, one of the things that you talk about in the book, Guy, is you talk about the parallels between you and your son during his addiction and then, you know, the period after his passing. Can you talk to us a little bit about that as well?
Yeah, I think the best way to address that for your audience today is to talk about it in terms of I was told by others. I once worked for a company called Tivoli. And for those of you who don't know, Tivoli was a company that, in a functional sense, put Austin, Texas on the map. It was a small startup software company with a very big idea that eventually became a very big financial success. I won't get into the technical details, but essentially software companies had become a victim of their own technological success and were now having trouble distributing their software out to other businesses that would buy it and be able to use it. And so Tivoli had solved that problem on paper. And the mission of the company was to bring that solution into the real world. And these were sort of a lot of eccentric individuals. Most of them were brilliant. The people that were doing the hiring had a real talent for ferreting out brilliant and creative thinkers. And with that eccentricity, you're talking about people that are sort of on the far end of the bell curve. And with that eccentricity comes a lot of other things. They tended to be very creative and playful. And when we started making money, one of the playgrounds we had was high-end spirits. We drank a lot of single malt scotch and good bourbon and that sort of thing. And I developed a heavy drinking habit. And, you know, for a time, that's all it was. So when I experienced this adversity, alcohol was a crutch for me in a lot of ways. And sometimes it was too frequent that I would drink too much. And so my son was dealing with his own emotional pain that had to do with the divorce between his mother and me and some other things that he just was not very motivated, and that created a sense of self-loathing. And so he turned to drugs and friends who use drugs. And in many ways, that's what I did. except that my drug of choice was alcohol. And for me, there wasn't really a big difference. But my friends would say, you know, that they would see in social media, they would see things that I would open up in ways that probably was not very good for them to see. And part of that would be due to the liberating effects of alcohol. And instead of actually coping with those things, I was just trying to numb the feelings. I was trying to make them not be there and to hold things at bay. And a friend of mine said to me when I was writing the book, she said, you engaged in some very self-destructive behaviors. And I was very sad for you, but it was really difficult to watch. And so, likewise, it was very difficult for me to watch my son. And in fact, I have the blessing that we were estranged for a while. I could not be in his life because his behavior was so destructive, not only to himself, but to others. And so what that meant was that when the holidays come around, for example, Christmas is coming up, I think about my son, and I'm sad that I don't get to spend Christmas with my son, but I don't have to deal with the pain of his absence compared to him being present in my life all of that time. And so it makes that experience a little less lonely and a little less sad. But more to the point of your question, this is how people tend to react to the addict. They tend to want to eventually push them away because the behaviors become so difficult to watch. And when I talk about the parallels, that's what I'm talking about. We're not coping well, and we rely on some kind of drug or other unhealthy outlet to help us in the moment of that pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can totally relate to so much of what you're talking about, Guy, because when Mario was sick, there were times that I love to make Kahlua at the holidays, and
right.
I give it as gifts. And one year it was a pretty intense Christmas. This was when his kidneys failed and everything just kind of imploded on us. And I found myself when I came home from the hospital, I was testing the Kahlua a little too often, but it helped, like you said, to kind of numb the intensity of that moment. And I remember thinking at one time, I see how people could very easily rely upon alcohol to help them through stressful points in their life, because I looked at that bottle every night thinking, okay, I think I need some help to get through the evening and help me sleep. So we all have those crutches that we use to get through crisis. Some people turn to drugs, some people turn to alcohol, you know, some people turn to food. And some people turn to work. They become workaholics. They just want to avoid it. But I think there will be a crisis in your life. Folks, if you're listening right now and you're going, this does not apply to me. I have not lost my son. I have not lost my husband. I can't relate to this. Trust me, you need to remember this conversation, because we all have crisis. We all have losses in our life. Like Guy mentioned earlier, that he had lost a job that he felt was his fast track to becoming, you know, that superstar that he had always wanted to be. We all have that loss, and how you work through that is unique to you. It's unique to you. Guy, we need to take a real quick commercial break, but before we do that, Would you mind giving your contact information out so that if somebody's listening and they want to know more information about you or your books, they can reach out?
Yes. you can go to my website. That's sort of the central dashboard of how you can get to know me and either buy my books or just have access to content that I provide at no charge. My website is GuyOliverSpeaks.com. And that's where I recommend you go.
Okay, very good. Well, folks, we're going to take a real quick commercial break. We'll be right back after this.
Tune in every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. to Tough Talk Christian Radio with Tony Gambone. Tough Talk Christian Radio is for those who want to share and receive expressions of faith that will help you take the next step in your relationship with Christ. Listen in to hear from others about their experiences of faith and the love of Christ. Call in to share your experiences at 347-989-1363. Learn more by going to toughtalkchristianradio.com.
So you think you're tough enough for Tough Talk with Tony Gambone? Tony knows how to dish it out. Can you take it? Tony Gambone is a communicator, mentor, and entrepreneur whose tough style and generous spirit quickly garnered recognition in many a competitive arena. Now he's bringing his intelligence and knowledge to you as a hard-hitting radio talk show host and thought leader. Tune in and see for yourself. Tough Talk with Tony Gambone. It's a sure thing. To find out more, go to Tough Talk with Tony Gambone. Gambone.com.
Did you know that an estimated 52 million Americans listened to internet radio in the last month, or that weekly internet radio audience has increased 60% over the last year, and that more than 8 in 10 people are online from any location? Tough Talk Radio Network is a company dedicated to providing a platform that allows opportunities for guests, hosts, and sponsors to market themselves through the internet radio medium where they can be heard by millions. To find out how Tough Talk Radio Network can help you, go to toughtalkradionetwork.com.
Hey folks, welcome back to Empower Radio Show. This is Linda Ballesteros, and our guest today is Guy Oliver. Guy is the author of A Life That Mattered. And, you know, we hear so much about the lives that matter these days, and it seems to be, you know, a kind of a trending phrase, if you will. But Guy, what you talk about with your son is that every life matters, and we all know that, but that every life touches people in a way that we're changed. So tell me about how did that situation with your son, the relationship you had with your son, how did that change you going forward after losing him?
Well, I had the opportunity first in the 12 months after his release from prison before his accident, I had an opportunity to witness his proclivity to get back up on the horse. That cliched adage about, you know, being thrown from a horse and then getting back, it's important to get right back on. He suffered a number of setbacks, which to him, to many of us, we would look at it and we'd say it was small. For example, his mom, who his entire life always doted on him, while I was trying to man him up and make him take on the world, she was treating him in a very opposite fashion. And so she wanted the very best for him after prison. And so she talked with him a little bit about what he wanted to do. And he and I were talking vocationally and professionally, and I was giving him a lot of practical advice, and he chose welding because it was a 9-month program, so he could, you know, start making money very soon afterward. she had found this really high-end vocational school that taught several vocations, one of which was welding, and he was very excited. The equipment was pristine, and it was sort of like the vocational equivalent of going to a high-end university, a prestigious university. And he was very excited. And this was all very close to the time that he had just gotten out of prison, and the hardships there were unspeakable. There was, during his out-processing time that lasted about 6 months, I believe, they suspended weekend meals. And, the inmates would have to figure out a way to get food.
Wow.
So there was a lot of hardship in prison that people don't tell you about. And so this stood in stark contrast, this hardship that he was stepping out of, and now this wonderful educational opportunity that was availed to him. And a week before he was supposed to start, he was unexpectedly rejected because they did a background check and found out he was a convicted felon. And he called me, and the disappointment in his voice was heartbreaking. A lot of that has to do with the fact that he was my son. And, your kids, you feel their pain a lot more than you would maybe somebody else's pain. But I gave him the pep talk that fathers are supposed to give him. And we found him another vocational school for him to attend. And it was just thing after thing after thing like that, where he would experience a setback and he would say, "I just give me a second chance. I just need a second chance." And I watched how he would then turn that frustration. You were talking about how you respond to loss, whether it's a loss of a job, a loss of a spouse, a loss of a loved one. How you respond to it is what's important. And he responded by going on and doing the right next step, getting back on the horse. So when I lost him, one of the things that I took away was that proclivity for him to never give up. One of the things there were like a handful of things I told my children over and over and over. And one of them was the metaphor of the Gila monster. A Gila monster kills its prey by latching onto it and then not letting go. Slowly but surely, venom seeps into the victim. And after about 12 to 18 hours, it succumbs. And then the Gila monster has its prey. And I used that as a metaphor for the value of tenacity and to never give up on that dream that you had. And that on the first anniversary of his passing, I was accompanied by my wife and two friends, and we went to the cliffs right outside of Austin here, a place called Paleface, and where he used to jump off the cliffs into the water. And it was a place he loved, and so we went out there, and I had a very brief 7-minute conversation with him, and that was one of the things that I told him that I was so proud of. And I think the answer to your question is, in many ways, Tim changed my life by witnessing that, by witnessing all the adversity that he had to deal with, and that some of which he knew he brought on himself, which compounds the adversity. When you know that you screwed up and now you're having to pay for it, you want to kick yourself. You don't want to go off and try to make it right. You want to wallow in self-pity. But some of the adversity he didn't bring on himself. But he always persevered. And I think that is a terrific life lesson that I cover in this book. And talking about relevance to your audience, there is no substitute for tenacity and perseverance.
And things will happen in our life there again that didn't appear on our vision board. I certainly did not. I did not have on my vision board that I would be burying my son, my husband, at such an early age. But it is how we adjust to that. One of the things that I remember studying when I was studying natural health is we talked about creating a healthy body so that it would be more adaptable to things that were foreign objects or things that would throw us off a bit. I think that we have to be more adaptable in life as well, because we certainly can't predict. We can make choices, certainly, but we can't predict everything. Like you said, some of the things that your son experienced were because of his choices, and others, not so much. So I think if you're listening to this, folks, there have been many times in which you can look back and say, oh, that's right, that didn't work because I made the choice to do this. But then there are other situations where you can say, you know, I made all the right choices and it still didn't work. So I believe that in those situations, when in life you see that something is happening, it's happening for you, not necessarily to you. So there is a learning in that. And man, that sucks when you're in the middle of it. There is no other way to say it. It just sucks when you're in the middle of it. But when you can look back and go, good Lord, look how far I've come because of that, then that's when you no longer become the victim of life, and that's when you actually embrace those things that are happening. And it sound, you know, this sounds like some, you know, great book that you pull off of the shelf. But folks, I'm saying this because I have lived it. It was not my plan to be a widow before I was 65. That was not my plan, but it's what's happened. Here we are, and you make the decisions, and you just move forward. So I think perseverance is certainly one of those things that if we can teach our children anything, perseverance and tenacity, those would be at the top, because no matter what industry they go in, no matter what their path in life is, they have to have those two to be able to glide through this. Sometimes you're not gliding. Sometimes you know, it feels like you're rock climbing, but you know, sometimes you just have to have that. So Guy, again, before we get to those final questions here, could you give your information, your contact information one more time, your website one more time, so that people can find out more about Guy Oliver?
Sure. It's my name, Guy Oliver Speaks, SPEAKS.com. For those of you who haven't seen my name spelled out, it's GUIOLIVER, GuyOliverSpeaks.com.
Perfect. Now, Guy, do you speak to groups? Are you open to being contacted to speak to any types of groups about your books?
Yeah, unfortunately, I've had the opportunity to speak publicly on a number of occasions. The last time I spoke about my book, it was a book signing party, and one of my friends did me the favor of interviewing me in much the same way you are. I say unfortunately because I have a natural fear of public speaking, but I've had the opportunity to confront that fear. And so, yeah. So yes, the short answer to your question is yes.
And Guy, you will persevere to become a great public speaker. And, you know, if you read the bios of a lot of the speakers that are so well known, they all say they have a fear of public speaking. You know, many of them say that, You know, they are back in the dressing room throwing up 5 minutes before they walk on the stage. So it's pretty common with those very successful. So keep that in mind. So the final questions here are, when faced with obstacles, what kept you going?
Well, there was first of all, to just repeat myself, I apologize, but it was just the example of my son, knowing that he had really taken to heart the advice that I'd given him so many times about persevering and being tenacious. It was also the encouragement of my friends. I would say the greatest champion during that time in my life was my wife, mostly because she had the greatest opportunity to encourage me. But as far as what I did, I made the investment in people around me beforehand. And so when that crisis occurred, I had resources that for a person my age at the time is often, sadly, not available to a lot of people who haven't made that investment in other people. It was relying on others to remind me to keep going, to remind me of the path that I already knew, but sometimes becomes obfuscated by the very obstacles in our path that we're trying to overcome.
That means a lot, Guy, because I believe that many times we get so caught up in our daily life that we miss opportunities to help someone else who may be struggling a bit. Folks, what I would encourage you to do is just what Guy was saying that he had done. He made relationships not based on the fact that someday I'm going to need them, but he made relationships based on the fact that they needed someone in the moment. And the way the universe repays that, the way God repays that, fill in the blank, is that when you need it, someone will be there. It may not necessarily be the same people. They may just have seen your good deeds and not been a recipient, but saw the person that you were, the person you stepped up to. So be that for someone who needs that. You know, we all need that shoulder to cry on sometimes, or just that person that gives us a thumbs up. I can't tell you how many times I received a private message that would just say, "I'm thinking of you," or a text that says, you know, "just thinking about you today." That's all I needed. I don't need a long conversation. I just need that. It doesn't take a lot of time, folks. So, you know, keep that in mind. Who can you reach out to today that might need a kind word? The next question is, other than a coach, who has influenced you the most?
I hate it when I feel like I'm repeating myself, but I would say my son was a big influence on me, but I would say the person who has influenced me the most is my wife, because she is so practical and she is so down to earth. And we like to joke that I'm the guy in the relationship. I mean, that I'm the girl in the relationship and that she's the guy. I am one of those, and it's so embarrassing to me, but a lot of guys don't struggle with emotions in the way that I do. Either that or they're just really good at suppressing them. I'm not sure which, but I'm not good at suppressing them, and I'm just, they sort of cloud your thinking. And when life gets difficult, a lot of times my wife is there to sort of cut through the BS and say, Don't take your eye off the prize. This is the goal. This is you're focusing too much on these things over here that they're really not important. And so that sort of keeping me on the straight and narrow in that regard, helping me to when my mind is cluttered with all these competing thoughts and bad feelings and things like that, she is kind of a rock for me.
Mm-hmm. And I do think we all have to have that person that keeps us in check, so to speak. And I am sure that you provide that for her in ways as well. But we need to have that yin and yang, just so that we stay in balance. It's really important for us to experience both sides. But it's good to have someone there that says, "Hey, let's look at this just a little bit. Let's keep things in perspective here." So it's good that you have her to kind of bounce things off of, and that she's able to, kind of keep you focused on that goal. Like you said, keep your eyes on the prize. So the final question here is there one thing that you wish you had known early on that you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah. And before I say that, I want to say that this is relevant. What I'm about to say may not seem initially relevant to your target audience, but it is. I guess it was about 3 or 4 weeks after Tim's accident, my oldest daughter sent me a note that has made the rounds on the internet countless times. If you're on social media at all, you'll probably see it. It's a piece entitled "Seven Things I Wish I Had Known About Grief Before a Crisis," or words to that effect. And about the third or fourth one is, people you thought would be there for you won't be, and people who you thought wouldn't be there for you will be. And I was amazed at how true that was. I had, a couple of close friends who, when they were confronted with this terrible thing that happened to me, they simply were not able to look at it. They couldn't acknowledge it. They didn't want to talk about it. They didn't want to send me notes of encouragement. And then there were a few people who I just thought I was casual acquaintances with, who were touching base with me every single day in the beginning, and encouraging me, and exhorting me to get outside and grab some vitamin D, that kind of thing. Likewise, when you are faced with a hiccup in your business plan, or losing a job and trying to reset your plan for the rest of your life, or whatever it is, know that there will be people there for you if you're at all sociable or have done any networking at all. But the people that show up for you will probably surprise you, and you will probably be disappointed by at least a few people who simply can't cope with what you're dealing with.
That is so very true, Guy, because there were times I thought, this is not contagious. I mean, it's just something I'm going through. It is a life event. Just by sending me a text doesn't mean that you'll lose your husband too. It is not contagious, But it feels as though that they are purposely avoiding you for some reason. And I think it all boils down to they just don't know what to say. Well, like I had said earlier, folks, sometimes just a text that says "thinking about you" is good enough. There were times I didn't want to have a conversation, but it was nice to have those texts where people were saying they were thinking about me. So don't avoid someone that is going through a crisis simply because you don't know what to say. Just let them know, I don't know what to say. You know, it's okay to say those words. I don't know what to say, but I'm here for you. Sometimes that's all we need to hear, isn't it, Guy?
Yes, and I just wanted to echo your sentiment. I'm thinking of you is not something that you have to know how to say. That's, you know, as you said, there were moments, well, I would say after the first year or two, I really didn't want to talk about it. There was no point in talking about it. I wouldn't know what to say. But to know that there are people in your court just it's so uplifting to get that little ping that is a text message or a Facebook IM that says, I'm thinking of you today.
Mm-hmm.
That's an amazing, that really uplifted my spirits to receive those.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Guy, we're coming to the end of the time. It goes by so quickly. Is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners today?
I would just say that, well, other than buy my book, I would just say that even if you don't buy my book, I would say, please take from this one-hour broadcast that you've spent, this time you've spent with us, the message of optimism and hope and the exhortation to be tenacious. Those are abstract words and concepts, but they apply to whatever you're going through, any crisis that you might be going through, as well as trying to strive for some dream that you have. Those are universal concepts that my book speaks to and that I hope have come through, you know, this time that we've spent together. That's really what I would like for people to know. There is hope for optimism. There's reason to be optimistic, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Guy, thanks again for being on the show today. Really appreciate you sharing this. And also sharing how the loss really applies to everyone. And again, I really appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me, Linda.
Absolutely. Folks, you heard the word tenacity and perseverance several times today. And as I mentioned, I really believe that those are the two characteristics that can help you to succeed. It is not the degrees that you have hanging on the wall, because without perseverance and without tenacity, you can have a whole wall of degrees and diplomas and certificates. But if you don't have the drive, then all of that is not much more than just kindling. So if you have children, if you have grown children, really work with them to have that staying power, that stick, that they commit to something and stay with it, and they persevere and they see it to the end. And if there are hiccups, as Guy mentioned, if there are hiccups along the way, then they learn to be flexible and adapt and pick up on those hints and it's almost like they're clues to take you maybe in a different direction, because, you know, your goals are not always set in stone. It's a good target, but we have to be flexible here. So as always, I want to leave you with a quote. This quote is Victor Hugo: perseverance is the secret of all triumphs. And I definitely agree with that. Folks, thanks again for joining me on Empower Radio Show today, and I hope to see you next time.
As we close our show today, we want you to know it's time. The time is now for you to cast off the chains of mediocrity and reach for that brass ring. The time is now for taking that giant leap to start a business. Step out of your comfort zone and become the you that you've always dreamed of being. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Empower Radio Show. That's at MPOWERRADIOSHOW. Thank you for being with us today on the Empower Radio Show.